Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odds. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Get ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
We welcome you into Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com radio for a Tuesday here, game week 3 underway as the Pats get ready to travel to the Baltimore Ravens this next Sunday night. It'll be the primetime game on NBC. I'm not even sure where to start today, so let's just start right at the beginning. As many of you are aware, it is Nitpick Tuesday, which is a tradition that we have basically built up over the course of 12 years covering the Patriots and covering the NFL here on Patriots.com radio. I don't know. I share your disappointment. I share your shock and chagrin. I share your surprise. But what I don't share overall is disbelief that this could never happen. Because I think we've all been around, and I know I have, but we've all been around long enough to know that that's the beauty of the National Football League on any given Sunday. And it just happened to happen to the New England Patriots this Sunday. I said this, I believe, several times during the week. Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong, okay, please. But I don't believe I am here. And those of you that listened to the program any at all last week probably remember. I thought that this team was complacent. I thought that this fan base was complacent. I thought that most everybody just mailed this in last week and thought that they would just be a walkover against Arizona.
Yeah.
So shame on everybody for thinking that, including the guys down the hallway.
Shame on me, too, because I felt that way, too. I thought the Patriots were going
to
roll.
Now, I picked the Patriots 31-20. I nailed the Cardinals' point output. Did I not?
You did.
Okay. So here's the problem with that. I didn't nail the Patriots' point output. And you have
sucky.
You have nobody to blame but yourself. The defense played well enough to win. That's nitpick number one. I've got three major nitpicks I'm going to share with you. It won't begin to touch them all today. And this is where I want you to contribute to the program. I'll share one with you. We'll get into it a little bit. I'll share the other two. And quite possibly, you also share my other two. So we'll get into it here in a moment. But the thing that really bothered me the most out of everything is what I just mentioned with Fred and Andy and Paul, the end of PFW in progress. Fact of the matter is that when Hernandez went down in the first quarter, this team did not adjust. It didn't adjust. And I expect more out of the personnel on this team. I expect more out of Josh McDaniels. But I thought the play calling was absolutely horrific. Horrific. Now, I've covered the National Football League for a long time. I've been with the Patriots for 20 seasons. I've covered the NFL here in New England for 25 years. I've covered the National Football League overall, counting my time in Texas, for 32 years. So I've been around this league for a long time. The play calling stunk. Okay, do I know all the ins and outs and the X's and O's? No, I'd love to have a chance to learn it. But I'm not privy to what the players and the coaches are privy to. But I can tell you when I think that an effort is not solid. I can tell you that when I can tell you when an effort should have been better because of the personnel that you do have. And the fact is that this team should have adjusted better to Hernandez going down. There's no reason, there's absolutely no reason for them not to have in the playbook a little dink and dunk magic. That they could have gone. They could have used Welker more often. They could have used Edelman if they're pissed off at Welker, which I don't buy that for a minute. We'll probably get into that later. But they certainly could have adjusted to the point where Hernandez's loss would have been minimized. Now, I did notice that the battle up front was overwhelmingly won by Arizona. And the guys talked about that a little, and I think you probably recognize that as well. Calais Campbell was an absolute beast, and I really just sort of downplayed him. I poo-pooed him last week. I said, ah, he's an okay defensive end. He's a frickin' monster last week. He really was. And I think you've got to give Arizona the credit more so than you have to discredit the offensive line. However, I will discredit the offensive line because Brady got sacked four times. A couple of those were on him. A couple of those were not on him, based on my recollections and my looking back at it. But I also understand why a couple of those were on him, because he's feeling the heat. It's human nature. And I heard some ESPN analysts talk about this. I think one of them was, who's the running back? Merrill Hodge. I heard him talking about it the other day. I think it was yesterday. And I heard him saying, look, you know, fact of the matter is that quarterbacks are human and they feel the heat. And when you go down a couple of times and you know the right side or whatever coming at you is going to be loose, then human nature is such that you're going to stutter and you're going to shake and you're going to tremble and you're going to look to get rid of the ball quicker than you get rid of the ball normally. If you're not confident in one side of your offensive line, that eliminates a good percentage of your options on offense. And you're just not going that way, because you're not sure that you can protect yourself. And I think that was a factor. I think, you know, Sebastian Vollmer and Marcus Cannon, while they played well week one, did not play well week two. Logan Mankins, admittedly, he said he stunk. He got beat a couple of times. Nate Solder. So I'm just, you know, and then I know that a couple of people have tweeted me and emailed me and Facebooked me in the aftermath of the game and said they watched Donald Thomas, who was a new first-time starter on the offensive line, and he got whipped like a rented mule. So the overall grade for the offensive line can't be anything but an F. And when your offensive line, you don't have confidence in your offensive line, your quarterback's play, even though he threw for 300-plus yards, your quarterback's play is going to suffer. And I really believe that to be part of the problem. Now, here's another thought on the play calling issues. I thought that the play calling certainly lacked imagination, but I also know that they felt like they could run on Arizona. But I was curious as to the personnel groupings in some of their running situations. Like, for instance, you know, Danny Woodhead and a couple of them. Why didn't we see Brandon Bolden in there in a couple of the short yardage situations? Bad play calls. Why didn't they go with a bubble screen or wide receiver screen? Or why didn't we mix something up and try an end around? I'm just catch them off guard. I was just totally stunned by the lack of imagination on offense. And you got to blame the play caller on that one. That's all I can do. I just don't think that they were versatile enough. And you're telling me that this offense can't overcome the loss of Aaron Hernandez with all of the weapons that this offense has? You're telling me that they can't overcome the loss of one player? That may be the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Sure, the talent's there. We've seen it. You've seen it. I've seen it. The world has witnessed it. The world has witnessed it. And you can't overcome the loss of one player, and you can score 18 stinking points against the Arizona Cardinals, who have a good defense. Okay? Again, I'm not going to discredit the Cardinals' defense. Arizona deserved to win that game. And if, you know, Steven Gostkowski doesn't, you know, duck hook the 42-yarder at the end, and then the Patriots win that game 21-20, I'd be saying, and I think you would be saying the same things as I'm saying right now. Didn't deserve to win. Glad to get out of there with one. Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, and that's the way that would have stood up. The unfortunate part about it is that even though Gostkowski had a great day and kicked 250-yarders in a single game, first time, by the way, in Patriots history, I don't know if you knew that or not, no Patriot kicker has ever had 250-plus-yard field goals in the same game in franchise history until Sunday. So it's hard really even for me to blame Gostkowski for a failure, even though ultimately it was on his shoulders. A 42-yarder was 11 yards closer than his longest kick. He tied his career high with a 53 during the game. So we give a little, we take a little here on Nitpick Tuesday. Give you a nitpick, give you a superlative, give you a nitpick, give you a superlative. Tough, though, to come up with those today, even though there were some. All right, here's how you reach me on the program. I got a couple of others to share. I know that you have your nitpicks to share as well, and we're going to share together and see if we can't figure this thing out. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. You know that, but there it is again. Webradio, all one word, @patriots.com. So fire off an email, give me your thoughts, your concerns, whether or not you agree or disagree with me in terms of my first nitpick of the day. You can also pick up the phone, and let's talk it out. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Again, that's 508-298-0398. Easy, right? Facebook. Get me on Facebook, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E. If you haven't friended, friend. And then we'll receive that friend, and then we'll answer in the affirmative, and then we can chat, and we can post, and we can share thoughts on the Facebook page. And then, of course, there's Twitter, and thank you so much for the Twitter additions over the last couple of weeks. I do appreciate it. It means a lot. And this way we can go back and forth on Twitter, and you can follow me on Twitter, @JRook. J-R-O-O-K-E 0722. @JRook0722. That's the Twitter address. Fire it up. Send me some tweets. We'll share them here on the program. So there's four ways you can get in touch with us here on Patriots Playbook. Four different ways. There's no reason for you not to contribute today. No reason. I know you got the nitpick. I know that I've only mentioned one because I'm not gonna steal your thunder. Not going to steal your thunder. All right, let me start off with Ray, who posted this on Facebook today. He says, I think McDaniels has to take a decent amount of the blame for what happened last Sunday. Really bonehead play calls at times. Couldn't agree more, Ray. Couldn't agree more. He says, the one I remember being the worst was a run play on 3rd and 25 in the second quarter. The odds were not in our favor for converting that play, and we came up 20 yards short. I really felt like we gave up a few times during that game. After Woodhead's game-winning touchdown was called back, McDaniels called two quarterback sneaks. I understand clock management and ball control, but at least take another shot of the end zone with that situation. By the way, poetic justice, anyone? You know Billy Cundiff was smiling ear to ear after Gostkowski missed that kick, no question. And then he adds, on a good note, after game two, Pat's defense overall is number two in the league. 29 spots higher than last year. Glad you noticed that, Ray. Actually, you are correct. That is certainly a superlative to talk about. The defense has limited both of their opponents to under 300 total yards in the first two games, which is certainly a step in the right direction. Nobody's blaming the D here. Nobody. The offense had too many mistakes, and then we had a huge gaffe in the special teams in the kicking game when Zoltan Mesko had a punt blocked, and it gave the Cardinals the ball at the Patriot 2. To get out of that with anything less than a touchdown would have been a friggin' miracle. It almost happened, but they did give up the score. Guess what? That ended up being the difference in the game. You hold them to a field goal there, the Patriots win that football game. So all I'm saying is, special teams, turnovers. Patriots made them. They made mistakes. It cost them. They lost the game. They should have won. They still could have won and didn't deserve to win. They did not deserve to win it. Nobody can argue that point here, you know, 48 hours after the fact, which is amazing. And like I said, we would be saying how lucky they were if they managed to win that game and Gostkowski had nailed that field goal. And they had walked away 21-20. You know, and we'd say, hey, well, you know what? In championship seasons, every team has to win one like that or two like that. And that's true. But I would also, you know, tell you that, you know, even in championship seasons, sometimes you stub your toes where you don't think you will. So to me, this now puts the Patriots, this puts the target square on the backs. Where do they make up for this one? Do they make up for it here this week on the road at Baltimore? Obviously, we'll talk much more about Baltimore as the week progresses here. But I think it's going to be really hard. I do think the Patriots will be focused, and I think we'll see a better effort. But keep in mind, Baltimore also lost. Lost a game they felt they should have won. Even though they were on the road, you know, Philadelphia did beat them by a point. So I got to admit, I already don't feel terribly good about this next Sunday night's game. So at any rate, that's kind of where I'm starting with today, and I want you to jump in as well. Webradio at Patriots.com. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. That's how you join us. 508-298-0398. Facebook, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E. And the Twitter page, at JRook0722. J-R-O-O-K-E. 0722 is the Twitter page. Let me see. I thought I had somebody actually come through on that one just a little bit already. Yes, Brian sends this one. He says, on Donald Thomas, just rewatched the game and I assigned 80% of the bad plays to him. And then he says, I can live with the other 20% of bad plays, such as Lloyd and Brady working on chemistry. Growing pains I can accept. And then I don't even nitpick Gostkowski. Calais Campbell is as good as it gets at disrupting kicks. That's true. That's true. I think we need to give Calais Campbell some real credit, Brian, because, quite frankly, I thought he was an absolute monster. He looked like an all-pro player against the Patriots. Of course, the offensive line is, as we all know, it's got its issues. And while they didn't make themselves known against Tennessee, they certainly made themselves known against Arizona, and quite frankly, I think with a team with a strong front three or four, it's going to be difficult. I hope it gets better as the season progresses. I have my doubts. Early on, I was not a fan of trying to, you know, bring in Brian Waters, but now I can see where adding him back into this mix, no matter what you think of him, it would immediately help the depth situation and immediately solidify things in the middle of the offensive line and allow guys to play their more natural positions. And if it truly is all about winning, I don't know how you can't go get him. This will be interesting to see how it plays off. And by the way, one more thing about Welker, okay? And I mentioned this with Fred and Paul and Andy 25 minutes ago before we got going here. But I'm going to say it here, and I'm going to say it now. I really believe the whole schmear about Wes Welker and his lack of touches is all a media fabrication. Fact of the matter is that Josh McDaniels, and blame Josh McDaniels on this if you want to, but they've decided to go with the two tight end set. They didn't adjust well out of it. But because they've decided to go one way, less opportunity for Welker. Now, I don't know if they're punishing him or not. That makes no sense to me. Why would you punish a guy if you know that he's not returning next year? And I've told you I don't think he is. But even if you think he's not going to be here next year, then why the hell wouldn't you use him now while you still have him?
So ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, Bill. Why wouldn't you just use him? You're not telling me you're not going to use him because he wouldn't sign a contract extension? Come on. Really? That would be too petty. That would be almost like being in seventh grade. Well, if you're not going to do this, then I'm not going to do that. Come on! Grow up! Shame on the media for even throwing that out there. That's just, I won't believe that. I just flat out won't believe that until Wes or somebody else says, they're doing this to me out of spite. I won't believe it. And I don't think you should either. He's too valuable to this team. They didn't use him on Sunday enough, even though they did target him 11 times. Okay, they targeted him 11 times. That's more like, you know, Wes of old, right? They should have targeted him more. And I blame the imagination of the play caller on that one. All right, so anyway, kind of get us going, kind of get us rocking and rolling here. Let's get to the phones. Eldridge in North Carolina, you're going to lead us off today in the playbook. Hey, Eldridge.
Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm okay, buddy.
All right. I'm like you, man. I think Josh didn't use his imagination enough. But then again, you got to look at the players, too, though. You know, wide receiver depth, besides Welcher, we don't have it. I mean, you got two special team players playing receiver, Edelman and Slater. You got Silas is still on the practice squad or whatever.
Yeah.
Then you got Kerry Taylor. Okay, we cut the wrong players. They should have kept Gaffney, and they should have kept Stallworth. I don't care what nobody said. And about Welcher, if you remember correctly, they did Moss the same way, except they didn't pay Moss. They traded Moss. Mm-hmm. They did Moss the same way. He was a productive the first year he showed up. Second year, he wanted...
Great cash, homie.
You know, the second year, he wanted, I guess, some more touches. But like I said, they phased him out and traded him.
Right.
You know, so to me, it seemed like it's a trend. It's the same trend. You know, Welcher, I admit, he's about the best receiver on the team right now because Lord and Brady don't have that chemistry yet. That's why I can't understand why would you cut somebody who Brady had chemistry with.
Well,
I really thought
Eldridge before today, and by the way, the news of the day, if you haven't heard, is the Patriots have signed Kellen Winslow to replace Aaron Hernandez. That's for anybody who might be tuning in late. You know, Winslow is going to come in. This is why they worked guys out. You know, remember 2-3 weeks ago they worked him out, and the rumor was that he didn't pass the physical. Well, clearly that rumor was incorrect. So don't believe everything you hear or you read. All right, because they obviously liked what they saw enough to sign him today so they can go with their two tight end sets. And the fact of the matter is he's only a few years away from being the highest paid tight end in the history of the game until Gronkowski beat him with last year's contract. So you're going to have the last two guys who are the highest paid players at their position in the game lining up on either side or sometimes on the same side this next week against Baltimore. Now, I don't know what he really has left, but he did catch 73 balls last year. So let's see what, you know, Winslow can give you. But at least in theory, he can give you the same type of thing that Aaron Hernandez gave you in the past.
I hear what you're saying, Joe. But to me, those are tight ends. I'm talking about receivers that can stretch the field. You know, that's what I'm
talking about. But that's what Brandon Lloyd was brought in here to do.
Well,
and you've seen Brady go deep to him a couple of times and not connect.
Yeah, but see, that's why I can't understand either, because when he went Denver, had no problem with it. When he went the Rams, with he had no problem with it. I can't understand why he's having a problem with Brady. And to me, I think it's more him, to be honest. Not, I ain't talking about Brady, Lloyd. Because he's not featured. That's what I think. Because he was featured in both.
Lloyd!
And he produced. He's not doing it. Now, I know it's just a couple games. First games, I understand that. But still, he's not that same threat.
Yeah.
He's not that same guy.
Well, he may not be. You know, but I think it's pretty clear since he was targeted as often as he was, Eldridge, that I think Brady feels very comfortable with him. I just don't think they've been able to hook up deep yet, and that may still take a little bit of time. But you know what? They had success over the last couple of years without having a true deep threat since Randy Moss left. So I don't think it's the fact that you don't have a deep threat.
Okay.
What I believe it is that they apparently don't have the versatility enough, you know, when somebody goes down to say, okay, scrap that, let's do this. I wanted to see, as soon as Hernandez went down, I wanted to see them throw the little wide receiver screens in the bubble screens. I wanted them to, whether it's Edelman or Welker, or throw out of the backfield to a guy like Woodhead, or I wanted to see them dink and dunk those guys to death where they're going to put 7-8, you know, in the box and crowd the line of scrimmage and dare the Patriots to go over the top. And that's where you burn them with a guy like Lloyd or with a guy like Gronkowski.
Well, I understand that too. You know, I wish they would did that also, but still, if you think about it, I understand. Say we didn't have that when since Moss left, but have we won a Super Bowl yet with that? I know we came close with Moss too, but just like Super Bowl, when Grunt went down in the Super Bowl or the game for the Super Bowl, same feeling when Hernandez went down.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Same way. And I still say you can't win with tight ends running Hail Marys. I'm sorry.
No, well,
I can't see that.
That's probably also true.
But at least with the Giants, I'm going to give you an example. The Giants, the Ravens, the Eagles, they got receivers that stretch and the Steelers that scares the H out of a defense.
Because mm-hmm.
you got to cover all of them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And each one of them can run past the defense and open. We don't have that. Only thing we got is tight ends. And I've been saying that for 4 years.
Right.
You know, now we finally got a running back. I think really going to be pretty good later on, further in his career.
Yep.
And we got some Debbie backup. I'd be glad when Demps get back. You know,
yep.
So I can see him run some more.
Yeah.
But as far as that, the receiver core, like I say, if Lloyd go down and Welcher go down, who you got? You got Slater, you got elements.
Well, I'm also surprised that Deion Branch isn't back yet. I'm not sure who they would replace him with, but I thought this might have been Deion's entree back into the team, and yet they go ahead and they sign Kellen Winslow. So what this tells me now is that they are bound and determined to run this two tight end offense for Josh McDaniels.
I get that same feeling, but I can understand, okay, he didn't do that with the Rams. He didn't do it with us in the beginning. He didn't do it with the Rams, and he sure didn't do it with Denver.
Well, they 2 weeks into the season, they don't want to scrap everything they spent, you know, the off season trying to manufacture. And in a sense, I can understand why they don't want to do that. I'm sure they feel like they can still be successful. My problem is, and my point here is that, okay, that's great, but what happens if you're still not successful? How deep do we have to go into the season before you say, all right, here's where we need to show some versatility and some imagination, and let's do what we already know we can do best?
Well, they should do that after this game, because after this game, I mean, after last week's game, it don't get no easier.
Oh, we know that. No doubt in my mind. I mean, it starts now. This is going to be a pretty tough three-game stretch. You tell me now that this team could get two wins in the next three games. I'm good with that.
I'd be good, too, if I could believe that.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. I mean, this, to me, is the toughest stretch of the entire season. Maybe with the exception of having San Francisco and Houston late in December. But I think by then you're in playoff mode, and I'm not so sure that it'll be quite as much of a challenge.
No.
It might be. But you got, you know, those guys at home, too.
Yeah. And I wish, I'm like you, John, go get Brian Waters.
Yeah,
we need him.
Yeah,
I agree.
Go
get him. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, Eldridge. Appreciate that. All right, let's get one more in here before we take a break. Melvin in Tennessee, you're up next in the playbook, Melvin.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, buddy. What's up?
Not much. I guess it's just going to be somewhat of a continuation with Eldridge. I agree completely. But, you know, I called the other week, and was concerned, maybe it's just that I hold, of course, Brandon Lloyd such high standards, but when Hernandez went down, I expected for him to not look like, okay, he's a third or fourth option probably on this team. If you have to go to one or two in a game, I just think he should be able to handle that better than what they did. You know, I know it's just week two, but
no doubt
that was just my biggest concern, and that's what I called you for originally. No, last week he looked okay, but I thought they should look better than that, because listen, you know, to everybody at PFW with Andy and them, you know, they have this connection only in practice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, we need to see this. I mean, practice is practice, but this is the game. You need to be able to transition it into the game. So with them, he makes an athletic catch, and then he drops an easy third down,
mm-hmm.
you know, makes the kick a field goal. So, you know, you have to continue those drives. And it was, I mean, it's not like they didn't have the opportunity. It was just drop passes. So I just want to see his role expand. You know, just he needs to get more consistent on just making better plays. You know, just like Eldridge said, if you can do that with the Rams and the Broncos, you definitely should be able to do it with Tom Brady. I don't see where this drop-off is. I suggest it just change the numbers, because I'm telling you, 85 hadn't been significant since Hernandez had it back when he was a rookie. So I want to change numbers, you know, just I don't know.
To change the karma, right, Melvin?
Good. Please, dude. Please. I'm
going
to change it.
Okay.
Change it and get him. Just let's start over. I want you to start over.
All right, well, the fortunate part about this is that you're early enough in the season where, really, through two games, you can start over in a sense. But, you know, obviously, you know, it'd be great if they have, be great if they had, say, let me just pick somebody here. Instead of having to go and play Baltimore, it'd be great if they had Cleveland this week, where they could iron out their troubles against Cleveland. They don't have that. And frankly, I think it's probably better that they have a chance to get focused right away, because you know Baltimore is going to be just as angry over losing this last week. I mean, Baltimore losing to Philadelphia is really the worst thing that could have happened to the Patriots, in addition to them losing to Arizona. You realize
right.
that, right?
Right, right. I agree completely. But I guess on the positive side, you know, if they get down with these next couple of games, like I said, then, well, I'd still be confident with them, because I think, you know, thank God we have a nice, easy schedule, because, you know, I couldn't see those. I looked at maybe some other teams' schedules, And I'm thankful for the one that we got. But, you know,
well, yeah,
they normally don't play two games bad.
Yeah, I mean, again, there's nothing you can do about the schedule. I've said it before. I'll say it again. The NFL gives you the schedule. So you can't do anything about the fact that you think it's weak or strong or what have you. It's what the NFL gives you. You don't go out and schedule your own games like you do in the college ranks. So the strength of schedule argument is stupid. But the fact remains is that you still got to win the games that you have on the schedule. This was a game that certainly you should have won. Not only win at home, but against an opponent that doesn't exactly instill fear in your eyes or your heart. And witness everybody last week on this program. Nobody thought Arizona would win the game. Nobody.
Right.
Nobody. Nobody even had the Cardinals coming within 10 points of the Patriots last week. Okay?
Right.
So all I'm saying is that the Cardinals were ultimately disrespected by everyone involved with the New England Patriots. And I'm just wondering out loud here, thinking out loud. I write that column every week. So, you know, little plug for golocalprov.com. But I'm just saying, everybody, maybe down the hallway now, also had a little bit of that same malaise. Just, you know, take over. And you can't do that. You can't do that in this league when you've got 16 games to play, 16 weeks. Everyone is huge. This is why the NFL is as popular as it is. Because, oh, well, you know, hey, we missed one. Oh, you know, we got another one to play like you have in the NBA or baseball or whatever. You don't have that in football. Every game really means something. And so now, you know, I realize it's incredibly early, but don't you just see, you know, 3 months from now, when we're getting ready to start talking about playoffs in earnest and how it's kind of like, damn, how did we lose that Arizona game back in week two? It's going to come back to haunt you. So you got to figure out a way now to pick one up where you didn't get it. And I think that has to start this Sunday at Baltimore, because I don't think anybody really figured the Patriots would win in Baltimore. I really don't think anybody figured that. When you looked at the schedule before the season started and you're going win, win, lose, lose, win, lose, whatever you're doing, Baltimore was an L. It was on the road. It's kind of like, oh, well, they got to lose somewhere, unless you picked them to go 16-0. And Baltimore is probably going to be a loss. Now you got to try to turn this into a win.
Right, and they're going to have to. But like I said, they normally don't. I mean, I could have watched them when they played the Cleveland Browns, you know, a couple of years ago, and they just dropped an egg there. It was a pathetic game. But they went the next week and went to Pittsburgh and stomped them into the mud. So
yeah.
I think that would be the only thing that's positive I can look up from it, because they don't play like crap two games in a row. They have one crappy one time each year. You know, that was the Browns 1 year.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. And you're absolutely right, Melvin. That's a good point. And maybe I think Patriots fans should hope that that's what we saw this past week against Arizona, that this was the year's stinker. There's always a stinker somewhere in the 16-week schedule, and perhaps they just got it out of the way early. And I think the optimist has to look at it like that. The pessimist has a reason and has several reasons not to look at it like that.
Right.
Okay.
Like I said, I hope they get it going, but I think that'd be fine, you know. But I think of course if Bill Belichick can do anything, he'll get them in you know, game mode to turn things back around against Baltimore. So we'll see what happens.
All right, buddy. Thanks for the phone call. You got it. Here's one thing to keep in mind before we take a break here. One thing to keep in mind. This roster has turned itself over, okay, where you really have, you know, more youth than you have veteran experience. So when you talk about the Patriot way, and you talk about veteran presence and leadership, this was a little bit of a problem last year, and I think it's more of a problem this year with some of the younger players on the team. This is the first time they're facing this adversity. So like what Melvin just said, you know, hey, in the past they've been able to turn this around. Don't be so sure that this roster makeup can do the same thing that we've seen them do over the last few years. Now, keep in mind, 2 years ago, this was one of the oldest teams in the National Football League, age-wise. I believe they were, what were they, like, gosh, Kev, do you remember that? They were like eighth or ninth oldest, I think. They may have even been older.
I'm falling, and I can't get up.
No, that's me every morning. They may have been older than that. They may have been in the top two or three in terms of average age per player on the roster. And so in the last 2 years, this team, and I don't have the figure in front of me, and I'm sure somebody can research this and send me an email or a note or text or tweet or whatever. But here's the thing. They're younger. They have really transformed themselves over the last 2 years. younger players means you're going to make more mistakes, which also means you're going to have less resiliency until you learn it. So this week against Baltimore is a huge chance for the younger guys on this team to learn that resiliency that the Patriots have thrived on over the last several seasons. They haven't gotten it yet. I'm not sure they're going to get there. This may take some work, folks. This may take some time. It just might take more time. All right, what are your thoughts? Webradio at patriots.com. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Facebook, John.Rook. Twitter, at JRook0722. You got so many ways to get in touch. Need to hear from you here in the Playbook.
Verizon Fios is America's fastest internet. How fast is that? Faster than Patriots linebacker Gerard Mayo can take down a quarterback, a running back, tight end, or an offensive lineman who just got in the way. In fact, Verizon Fios internet is more than twice as fast as anything you've ever seen. And that means Patriots scores, videos, highlights, and more right when you want them. Fios is built to support multiple devices simultaneously with a constant stream of your favorite Patriots content. And that means you get Gerard Mayo sacks at Gerard Mayo speed.
Now that's fast.
Welcome to a world of football where and when you want it. Welcome to Life on Fios, proud sponsor of the New England Patriots. Fios available in select areas. Internet speeds up to 300 down and 65 up megabits per second available.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is teaming up with Bridgestone Tires for an offer that's going to make you and your family very excited. Now through September 30th, when you buy four select Bridgestone Tires at Sullivan Tire, you could receive a $70 American Express gift card or your very own Wii gaming system the whole family will love. See SullivanTire.com. Offer valid August 27th through September 30th, 2012. Mail-in claim form required. Cards issued by American Express Prepaid Card Management Corporation. Wii systems given away on behalf of Bridgestone America. Nintendo is not affiliated with this promotion. Certain limitations apply.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
Contractors, having trouble getting a construction bond? Did you miss the chance to bid a job because your agent didn't support you? Give me a call. My name is Brent Cross. I want to be your bond agent. Call 800-999-7345. That's 800-999-7345. Online at crossagency.com. Cross Insurance is one of New England's largest providers of construction bonds. Don't miss out on any more work. Cross Insurance, the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank, member FDIC.
This is Rob Gronkowski. I get lots of mail from fans asking me how they can be more like me, Gronk. It's easy. First, just head down to Dunkin' Donuts and pick up a freshly made bakery sandwich. Second, get a sweet nickname. Third, bench press 225 pounds 28 times. That's it. You're just like me, Gronk. Now hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab a bakery sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'.
Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac!
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good. They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call *NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Welcome back inside Patriots Playbook for a Tuesday here on Patriots.com Radio. I know that this song means a lot to so many people. It's one of the theme songs that you hear on NFL films, and who doesn't love NFL films? Huge part of, you know, what we've, you know, grown up with, what we've followed over the years. It's one of the reasons we love the sport as we do, because what the insight that NFL films gives us, you know, in recapping each and every Sunday and some of the brilliant plays that you see, some of the camera work, the cinematography, the voiceovers, everything. And the reason we bring that up is because if you hadn't seen or heard, NFL Films president Steve Sable died today from brain cancer, 69 years old. I didn't realize that he was as old as that. We just had his father a year ago in 2011 inducted, Ed Sable, who founded NFL Films, just had him inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But I guess back in March of that year, if you don't know, Steve Sable, his son, was diagnosed with a tumor on the left side of his brain after he was hospitalized from a seizure, and then they said it basically was inoperable. So I guess this was a day that, you know, was sort of inevitable. It just sucks when you hear the news and you hear the message come across, and he died earlier this afternoon. Did not realize he was 69 years old. But he started working with his father, Ed, who was the founder of NFL Films, as I said, back in 1964. And then they introduced a lot of things that were innovations at the time that we all take for granted now. Like, for instance, slow motion replays. And then they're the ones that actually started with the putting of the microphones on coaches and players, which is now commonplace. You know, mic'd up, right? Okay. NFL Films started that. Back in the day, 30, 40, almost 50 years ago now, they were doing things that today we take for granted that are common practice in media coverage of the NFL. So I wanted to at least take a moment to recognize, because one of the things we do like to do is talk about NFL-related subjects here inside the playbook in addition to the Patriots. And Steve Sable was really a huge creative factor behind what NFL Films has done over the course of many decades now, and it will continue to go on, and the legacy that he leaves will continue to turn out some of that innovation. But here's the guy that started that innovation. The statement from NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell was, Steve's legacy will be part of the NFL forever. He was a major contributor to the success of the NFL, a man who changed the way we look at football and sports, and a great friend. And I really don't know that you could put it any more succinctly than that. He changed the way we look at football. He changed the way we look at sports. Slow motion replays, microphones on coaches, close-ups. You know, extreme close-ups and following the action. We had some talented, if you think it's easy to follow, you know, some of the flight of the football on some of these slow-mo replays, think again. My guess would be that Steve Sable will soon follow his father, Ed, into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's just too bad it'll have to happen posthumously. But he began his career as a photographer under his father. So an amazing man who helped change the way we look at football, at pro football especially, and I did not want the day to go by without saying something about Steve Sable. Web radio at patriots.com, 508-298-0398, the Ace Ticket Hotline, John.Rook on Facebook, at jrook0722 on Twitter. Okay. On the phones, Big Al in Valdosta, Georgia. Hey, Big Al.
Hey, ditto on Steve Sable there, John.
Yeah, you bet.
Just a raving genius. Yeah, they're all a bunch of raving geniuses there at that outfit. And I grew up with them. Again, we're about the same age. And they would basically show you everything that TV couldn't show you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was still interesting, even though maybe you were watching a game on NFL films that you had already watched, you know, on live on television. You saw so many different angles and different things and heard different things that the networks at the time just weren't in the position to be able to show you,
mm-hmm.
you know, on a Sunday. And I personally have just is probably a huge library of NFL film stuff. I just love their stuff. The old This Week and then Pro Football Show with Brooke Shire and
yeah, right.
Pat Summerall.
Right.
You know, before ESPN, you had to wait until the Saturday, you know, the following Saturday, you know, your local station, one of them would pick up, and that would be a lot of times the first time that you'd see the highlights from the previous Sunday.
Sure. Yeah, that's right.
Hard to imagine now. With,
well,
you know,
yeah, just, in this day and age of instantaneous, you know, coverage and,
yeah.
and getting highlights on your phone and stuff like that. I mean, yeah, that seems ridiculous to even think, but you're right. I mean, NFL Films is something you live for.
When Monday Night Football started showing the halftime highlights, you know, the games that from the previous day, that was must view. I mean, you looked forward to the halftime because that's the first time that maybe you saw three or four games highlights that you hadn't seen yet.
No question.
If the game wasn't in your local area,
right?
You weren't seeing the game or the highlights,
right?
So they're just incredible, and they still are. But anyway, as for Sunday, disappointing. Obviously, I thought that a lot of people talk about the Gronkowski holding because obviously that took points off the board. I thought that was kind of a borderline call that probably could have been let go, but I wasn't really as upset with that because on the next play, they hit Welker in the flat, and we got a first and 10 on the 18, you know, with just a little less than a minute to go. And then the motion penalty on Gronkowski, I think, was actually in many ways more devastating than the holding penalty was, because that created a negative play, and I think it just sort of, it seems like it spooked Josh McDaniel from that point forward. He's like, you know, we're not going to have any more negative plays. That's it. You know, we're just going to have Brady fall on it, you know, a couple of times and kick it. You know, it's like after that 5-yard penalty on Gronk, we just shut it down, even though there was, you know, still time left to maybe get a little closer. I think if we had gotten it, if we had the ball at the 18, you avoid that penalty. If we just could have run it up the middle and got it down to maybe the 15-yard line in a couple of plays, then spike it, I don't see Steve missing that kick.
No, probably not. And I agree. It was a little curious. I know they were trying to just center it up between the hash marks, but I thought that, you know, I thought they wasted an opportunity. I realized that they played too conservative. It just, the play calling was just awful. I thought, and I think most everybody else would agree, that called for at least a shot or two toward the end zone.
Well, I wouldn't, you know, in that situation, I would not put the ball up in the air, but first and when you look back at first and 10 from the 18, and even with the penalty, you know, you hope that the penalty doesn't happen, but then you're first and 15 from the 23, I take a couple of more shots with running the ball to try to get it a little bit closer. I wouldn't necessarily put the ball up.
Yeah.
Because Brady, you know, he does get balls deflected and, you know,
yeah,
things happen.
Again, I don't really get it. And you're subjecting your quarterback to all kinds of punches and cheap shots as they try to knock
That's
the ball
right.
out. And
That's
I just,
right.
it was just dumb. I just thought it was dumb.
I think that penalty on Gronk just must have spooked. I'm not trying to play, you know, like amateur psychologist here because, I mean, you know, I don't know Josh McDaniel
well,
at all.
Well, it might have,
but it just sort of spooked him.
Yeah,
just didn't want to lose another yard.
Maybe. I by the way, the holding call that wiped out the touchdown on Woodhead, you know what? That play happens every snap of the football.
Absolutely.
Okay? There's that much. There's more holding than what he did on every stinking offensive snap in every game in the National Football League, Al.
Well, he made the mistake of doing it out in the open.
Well, he made the mistake of doing it, I guess, right in front of, I hate to say it, an inexperienced official. Now,
well,
I'm not going to blame the refs for the game, okay?
I'm not
because you can blame the refs for last night's Monday night game, which was, you know, they were bad, and there were a couple of other games that they were bad. And I think now, while they largely they got a passing grade for week one, I think, you know, unfortunately, the replacement refs now after week two are getting hammered, and perhaps rightfully so.
Right. They're taking a step back.
So now it's time, I think, you know, maybe the real refs have gained a little bit more foothold here. But the thing that kills me is that there aren't any conversations going on here. So I think the NFL needs to, you know, hey, this is going to get out of control unless we control it. So, you know, let's do something here.
Okay? I think they got
because you can't afford to put yourself in position to let an inexperienced officiating crew make a call that's going to win or lose a game for you. And you could certainly make the call that happened on Sunday. Again, the game should have been long over. The Patriots should have won that game well before Danny Woodhead's 30-yard touchdown run was called back. But I'm just saying, there's that much holding going on every snap of the football.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was a borderline call to start with, but unfortunately for Gronk, it was right out in the middle of the open. You know, he was naked. I mean, he was out in space.
Right.
And the guy got a good look at it, and I guess he felt like he grabbed his jersey.
Right.
But, you know, like I said, the next play, we hit Welker and get it down to the 18. So, to me, that you know, so what? Only need 3 points to win. I didn't really care when we had it first and 10 on the 18. The next 5 yards by Gronk on the motion penalty, which is more of a mental thing, to me, that was more disappointing than the holding. But anyway, I think after that, I think we just kind of went into this panic mode. You know, if we had just gotten it a little closer, I think he makes that kick. But anyways, you know what? If you have to lose, you might as well lose to somebody out of the conference. I would rather be 1-1 with a win over Tennessee and a loss to Arizona than the other way around.
Well, you know what? Leave it to you, Al, to find the silver lining.
That's the silver lining I'm begging for right now. Admittedly, I'm begging. But listen, you know, Baltimore lost, so they're both coming off of losses. This next three games, I agree with you, is the toughest stretch of the schedule. I'm still looking for 2 out of 3. It'd be nice to sweep now, considering we kind of stepped in it on Sunday. But, you know, if we just get 2 out of 3, I think we got a chance to get better. And the good news, I think you cannot blame this loss on the defense. And the defense played well. If they continue to play well, hopefully these types of mistakes on offense don't continue to happen.
I hope you're correct.
All right, man. Hey, listen, have a great one. I'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate the call, as always. Big Al in Valdosta, Georgia. Opens up a line for you at 508-298-0398, the Ace Ticket Hotline. I got to get to some of the emails here because a lot of you, by the way, have really done a great job here in firing off some nitpicks. So let's get to some emails. Blake from Southern Cal says, hey, John, want to play a game? This could just as well serve as a nitpick list also. The blame game. Going to give you a list of names, and you rate from 1 being least to blame to 10 being most to blame. Just some of the names I've seemed to hear the most from people since the loss for one reason or another. All right, so here we go. Hernandez injury. It did affect the play calling, did it not? Wow, that's a tough one right off the bat. I'd have to say, oh, goodness. All right, you know what? Let's go with, I'm going to go with 8. Brady, he's a 1. He wouldn't blame for the loss. Welker, 1. O-line, I'd have to say 7. Woodhead, 2. Gostkowski, he did miss it, so I'd have to say 10. He's probably most to blame. It's not fair. It's not right. But he did miss the kick. Gronk, 1. Referees, 6. Not the most to blame, but they're a part of it. Belichick, McDaniels. Those two guys, I'm also going to put up there with Gostkowski. 10. They stunk at play calling. All right. Good stuff, Blake. I like that. I like playing games like that. We like game shows. That's all we like, right? Let's see what else we got here. John says, John, glad you're back here in week two. It's my first contribution this season. My nitpick is Julian Edelman, but not for the reasons of others. Why the heck is everyone picking on Edelman because Welker is getting less playtime? Do these knuckleheads actually think Julian is responsible for being out there more than Wes? Look, it's obvious that something is going on between Welker and the team. Nobody outside knows what it is, as much as we would like to imagine we do. Edelman may not be Welker, but he is out there doing everything the Pats have asked of him. He's a good route runner, good hands, good blocker. We all know the level of player Welker is, but give me a break. Criticizing Edelman because he's not Welker is ridiculous, especially when he's doing everything he's supposed to be doing. What's next? Do we start criticizing one of the other eight tight ends we have because Hernandez is out? You touched on something very important here, John, and thanks for the email. Fact of the matter is that he's a good route runner, Edelman, good hands, and a good blocker. The last part of your statement, they're good blocker. There's a reason. You heard Tom Brady talk about it, and Josh McDaniels also spoke of it earlier today in his conference call with members of the media that he normally does on Tuesdays. The personnel groupings were such that they felt like, early in the game especially the start, they're going to run the football, okay? I think we saw that. They definitely had in their mind they were going to run the football. They feel like Julian Edelman is a better blocker than Welker. That's why, at least in my opinion, and what I've kind of gleaned from the last 2 days of listening to guys talk, is the reason that Edelman was out there ahead of Welker, especially in a starting sense, because he's a better blocker. That's the only thing it could be. My point, though, is that when the game changed, we didn't see the personnel groupings change. I don't know if that's stubbornness or stupidity. I don't know. Or an unwillingness to just, oh, well, throw out the game plan we worked on all week. Let's do something else. Maybe they said, no, this game plan will still work if we just give it time, if we're just consistent with it. And I get that thought process, okay? I do get that. Because Hernandez did go out early in the game, went out in the first quarter. It's kind of like, all right, well, we don't really want to chuck it right now, so here's what we're going to try to do. And so they tried to adjust a bit on the fly. It didn't work. All I'm saying is that when it's tied 6-6 at halftime, and, you know, you're lucky to have the game tied at 6-6, why weren't the adjustments made at the half? You know, Bill Belichick, as we all know, is the reason that he's Bill to us and to everybody else in the league is because he's famous for adjusting. He's always been able to out-adjust the other coach. He didn't do that on Sunday. I'm only assuming here, but it seems to me they just decided to stay the course at halftime, thinking it would be good enough to win the game, and they were wrong. They were wrong. Anyway, good email, John. Ian from the UK. Hi, John. First of all, I friended you on Facebook. Thanks for accepting. You're welcome. Second, I'm amazed at how down people are after Sunday's game. It's one game. I recall when we lost to the Browns early in the season not so long ago, and everyone was doom and gloom. It's week three. Let's get real, please. Okay, my little nitpick is I was surprised how lethargic the offense was Sunday. Every season we seem to have the odd game where they just don't seem to be on the same page. I doubt this will happen Sunday. I don't have the stats, but I believe the Pats rarely lose two consecutive games and mostly bounce back. And all the best, guys. Love the show. Thank you, Ian. You know, it's a good point. They rarely do lose two in a row. But then again, seeing the question marks that we have on this team, especially on the offense, as you said, they mostly bounce back. When you add to that the age factor, relatively young, some of these guys don't have that veteran presence you need or the veteran experience you need in order to know how to bounce back. So that'll be a huge test, I think, come Sunday. By the way, Melvin sent me a note and said that in 2010, he did the research here, that the Patriots were actually one of the youngest teams. Let's go back another year, Melvin, and tell me what you find, okay? Go back another year and tell me what you find. I was just wrong on the years. John, for years I've listened to people verbally bash Matt Light, giving him the name Turnstile, whenever Brady got sacked on the left side. Matt Light was a wall for 74 of 75 snaps, gets beat one time, and thankless fans deem him lousy, old, slow, etc. Well, to all those people who used to call Matt Light names, what do you think now? Ask Brady if you think Light was slow. Now, I find myself just as guilty as the Light haters when it comes to the officials. I've been complaining about the poor calls of referees. While I would sure love to have those guys back now, you just don't realize how good you have it till it's gone. Excellent, excellent email. WJ says, please let Paul know I wasn't using targets as one-stop shop stat. I agree that Welker wasn't on the field enough. Targets do show, however, that when he was out there, Tom didn't shy away from him. It's very true. Point being that Wes was effective, but limited for whatever reason by the coaches. The game came down to 2 points with multiple chances to win, despite the turnovers, subpar officiating, and weak blocking. As you said, New England is clearly the better team. Maybe if Wes played more, he makes an extra play or two and we win. I couldn't agree more. They should have adjusted. They didn't adjust. Adam in Connecticut. John, I have 2 quick points to make. The Welker situation. I think it isn't any one thing that's causing his low playing time, but a combination of things. With his age, the amount of hits he takes, the death in the family, his playing time prior to last year was around 75%. Edelman's play. Don't want to risk getting him hurt, run blocking, personnel packages, saving him for later in the year are all contributing factors. Can't stand the nefarious conspiracy theories. Well, let's give him a special point for using the word nefarious today, okay? Can we do that? What happened? We need to have our word of the day. We need to bring that back, don't we? Didn't we do that last year with Big E?
Yeah, I still have the bit and everything. It's just a matter of doing it. Okay. He has to be here for us to do it.
All right, well, then on Wednesdays and Thursdays, we need to bring back the, you know, Eric Scalavino word of the day. Because that's an excellent use of the word nefarious, Adam. See, we're going to try to raise the level of consciousness and smartness on this show. Smartness. I'm smart. Can't stand the nefarious conspiracy theories and refuse to believe them due to other factors and also because I'm a homer and hope there isn't anything like that going on. Okay. Good point, Adam. I happen to agree. And to my next point, here's my highly homeristic, yes, I made up that word, analysis of the game and attempt at seeing the silver lining. Play of the defense is looking more consistent even though the last two offenses were below average. Yes, as someone has already pointed out, right now, number 2 in the NFL in yards allowed. Woohoo! The loss will humble the team and make them more focused moving forward. A stretch, I know. The poor play, the offensive line, will make the coaching staff focus on correcting the problem moving forward. How they fix it, I don't have a clue. Maybe Waters, but that's the obvious direction fans will go. Other errors made, conservative play late in the game, running to the right at a key point instead of left, so on, will be corrected, not made again. I know it's a stretch, but it's just a fan trying to look at things positively. Feel free to rip my arguments to shreds. Not going to do it, Adam. I like your arguments. I like your arguments. It's all good. Kelly, play calling was awful. I know Josh McDaniels likes Brandon Lloyd, but we have a boatload of receivers to go to. Seemed like he was trying to force it to him way too often. It looked like he dropped more than he caught. In the fourth, Tom just marched down the field in a no-huddle, shotgun, unstoppable. How is it, after that drive, that you lose that rhythm? That's true. There was a drop by Brandon Lloyd in that drive that kind of just shut the momentum down. That's absolutely correct. He makes one unbelievable stretch, lean out. He was an unbelievable catch, getting both feet in. On the sideline route, the gain 9 yards. Do you remember that? I mean, it was he laid out for the ball and he brought it in. And I'm like, man, that was an unbelievable grab. And then he drops one that hits him right between the 8 and the 5, like Chad Ochocinco did. And Kelly says, oh, and why isn't Deion Branch back here already? That's a great question, Kelly. It's a great question. And the only thing I can tell you is that they're still, as we mentioned earlier in the program, they're still enamored with the 2 tight end set. They set clearly everything up to go that route in the preseason, and they have a major problem now with Hernandez being gone probably a month or more. So today they go out and they get Kellen Winslow. They signed Kellen Winslow Jr. I wish they signed his dad. Might be more effective. Now, we'll give him a chance. He did catch 73 passes last year. But, you know, there was some question as to whether or not he had anything left in the tank and, you know, his knees and everything, and Patriots did bring him in for a workout a few weeks ago. You might recall. I think that was the week before the season opener, and we talked about it on the very first playbook of the season. And there was a thought process that, at least a story out there, that he flunked the physical, which obviously was not true. Patriots were just doing their due diligence, like they do with a lot of different people who come through here and work out for them through the course of the year. And so this is one of those instances where, hey, the due diligence is paying off. They saw that Winslow could go. They have a tight end go down, is going to miss a month to 6 weeks, who knows how long, and they sign him because they are bound and determined to run this offense the way that they want to run it. That's fine. I want to see some flexibility with his offense. I want to see them go back to dink and dunk and doing what they need to do like they've done the last few years when they didn't really have that two tight end offense. They had it, but they didn't really utilize it. That's all I'm saying. I need to see some imagination. I need to see some flexibility. I need some ability to change on the fly, people, because they didn't do that on Sunday. That's what cost them the game more than anything else. They got the talent. They got the ability. And they didn't do it. They didn't use it. That's the number one nitpick. Has to be, far and away. They still win that game because the defense played well enough. Steven Gostkowski, yeah, I know, he duck-hooked the last one. He still hit four of them. Bottom line is, he shouldn't have had to kick five field goals. He shouldn't have had to. Some of those should have been in the end zone. Play calling. Bad. Alejandro says, chiming in from Worcester, sad news today as Steve Sable passed away. I became interested in the game of football watching the NFL Films documentaries. There was something about the camera angles and the music score that made them incredibly enthralling. What he did was remarkable. He preserved the memory of the NFL from Hank Stram matriculating the ball down the field to the painful slow motion take of David Tyree's catch. Very well said, Alejandro. Very well said. Share your sentiments. As for the nitpicks, how can you not blame the special teams with a blocked punt and a missed field goal? That's a 10-point swing right there. Can't remember the last time the Pats had a blocked punt, do you? No, I don't. I give Gostkowski a little leeway, though. He was the reason why the Pats were able to hang in there. Exactly my point, Alejandro. But now we know how the Ravens must have felt in the playoffs. Not cool. My question to you is this a wake-up call? Do you think the Pats can put it together after the upset, especially when a tough Ravens team is next on the line? That's a great question. I don't know, Alejandro, if I can answer that for you right now. I would tell you that, as a lot of people have suggested, it's very difficult for this team to lose two in a row based on past history, but I would say that this team is a little more unique in the fact that you have younger players in more key positions. We're getting a lot more starting and playing time overall than I think you've had in some recent memory. So I'd say that will be harder. And I think you're also, it's going to be harder because the Ravens were also losers last week. And they're going back home. And so you know they're going to be riled up. And I think the Ravens have a defense that may be every bit as good as, if not better than the Patriots. And the Ravens, at least in week one, I saw a no-huddle spread offense that was just damn dynamite. I mean, Joe Flacco looks like a friggin' statue back there sometimes, but the dude was winging it down the field, getting rid of the ball. I mean, he looks strong. I'm very concerned with Sunday. Very concerned. I hope I'm wrong. I hope the Patriots can bounce back. It'd be a huge win to get in terms of sending a message to the rest of the NFL, if not the AFC. I think the Patriots grab the contender spot back in the AFC if they can win at Baltimore, no doubt in my mind. But if they lose and they're 1-2 after 3 weeks, by the way, when was the last time I had this question thrown out at me? When was the last time the Patriots had a losing record? Last time they had a losing record was in 2003 when they lost the season opener at Buffalo. You remember that? The lawyer, right after Lawyer Malloy was cut, they lost 31-0 at Buffalo to the Bills. So that's the last time they had a losing record, technically, because they were 0-1. But the last time they had a losing record more than 1 week into the season, you'd have to go back to 2000 and Bill Belichick's first year. So it's been, what, 12 years, 13 years since they've had a losing record this far into the season? There you go. Just kind of shows you what we've been through, right? LaShauna. She says, West Palm Beach by way of Vegas? She moved to LaShauna, you moved to West Palm? Wow. She says, the defense played lights out. I watched the game on NFL Rewind, and Brandon Spikes was really a playmaker. Chandler Jones was also a monster for the Cards. Against the Cards. The offense played horrible, but at the end of the game, with the horrible penalties from Gronk, we still had a chance to win. The holding penalty should not have been called. No question. Let me know if you agree. Isn't holding if his hands were on the outside of the shoulder pads? Of course. What happened on the inside is, yeah, there was a little grab in there. And like I said earlier, LaShawna, and that's an excellent point by you, that play happens on almost every stinking snap of the football in every stinking NFL game that's played. Forget the NFL. College, pros, amateurs, peewee, high school. That kind of stuff happens on almost every snap of the ball. And some lame brain called it. Ridiculous. We need the real refs back, too. I'm not putting the loss on the referees, okay? I'm just not going to do it because the game was lost when the Patriots failed to adjust. Another John here says, some are nitpicks, some are questions. I'm not saying we weren't awful. We were. But there were several game-changing calls made that I want to bring up. If the refs are making no calls when Chandler Jones and Rob Ninkovich are getting put in strangleholds, how do they have the nerve to call that hold on Gronk that killed the Woodhead touchdown? Good point. The block punt. Is there a circumstance when it's okay to hit the kicker? Because Mesko was hit while his leg was extended, no call. Yeah, listen, if you get the ball, it's fair game, okay? So, yeah, you can hit the kicker as long as you hit the ball first. Long as you hit the ball first, you're allowed to run into the kicker. That's just the way it is on any kick. False start on the long snapper. Really? In the replay, he looked like a statue and Arizona jumped. That should have given us a first down on the 10-ish or so instead of a five-yard penalty. Absolutely correct. I didn't see it either. That was an amazing call. And I remember the crowd at the time that we put the replay up on the board, and nobody moved. Nobody flinched. Now, I don't know how the false start was called. But again, inexperience. I don't know how that could even be. How could that even be credited inexperience? When somebody didn't move, it didn't move. What's the official going to say? Well, I thought he moved. Well, you were wrong. Add all those points up, and this is just getting frustrating. I agree with you about the play calling. It's been awful. Let Brady off the reins. And when he went down the field for the touchdown in the fourth, they were awesome. Agreed. You know, free Tom Brady. Unshackle him. Let's go. Chris in Seattle. John, unfortunately, I missed the game this weekend. My family recently moved into a new house. We just had too much on our hands. So I only got the game in dribs and drabs on my phone. My nitpicks, therefore, are not about the gameplay itself. But, one, I'm disappointed in the fan base, myself included. As you have often mentioned, we Patriots fans are spoiled. Indeed, on any given Sunday, this includes the Pats. But haven't we all been talking about the offensive line as the greatest point of concern? Why are we so surprised that the Cardinals' defensive line was able to take advantage of this? And with the loss of Hernandez, I agree they should have been able to adjust, but it was certainly a shock. And so that, on top of the suffering O-line, that certainly is not a great recipe for resilient play. And the Cardinals are a better team than we all thought, period. Okay, good points there, Chris. And he says, number two, all this weirdness behind the scenes, it seems like there are several possible solutions to the deficiencies we're seeing. I have no doubt that with Brian Waters, our O-line would not be suffering to nearly the degree. We don't know the business side of things, but we need another proven leader. And then wide receivers. I really do wonder why Branch didn't make the cut. Now, I was also concerned about cutting Benny, and that seems so far to be okay, but it just seems like there's been some strange personnel decisions this year. That's what I got for nitpicks. Welcome to the team, Mr. Winslow. We'll take the help. I'll wait until later in the week to make a score prediction. I actually think it'll be very tight. I think our improved D is a considerable factor, but that being that it's in Baltimore and leaning toward the Ravens. Yep. Well, Chris, I'd have to go along with you on that one right now. DJ says, Aaron Hernandez is one player. This offense features Brady, Welker, Gronk, Lloyd, and Stephen Ridley. I understand Hernandez is a central part of the offense, but it's not like the cupboards are bare. Name an offense with comparable weapons. New Orleans, Green Bay. Okay, it's a good point. That's what we've been saying. You got so many weapons on this team, there's no way that it should have come to a screeching halt when one guy goes down. McDaniels, he says, is seen as an offensive genius. I'm extremely concerned there was little to no adjustment made to the offense post-Hernandez. There had to have been something that could have worked. Could not agree more. The defense played well enough to win that game. I don't understand how at halftime McDaniels didn't sit down and come up with something better than we saw. I 100% expected them to come out with a completely different look in the second half. It just wasn't there. Agreed. Brooklyn Matt. Rook, welcome back. Here's my two nitpicks. One, we weren't allowed to slowly and smoothly digest the loss during the waning moments of the game. Looking back, I would have preferred the Cardinals to protect the ball and punt at the end, but oh no. We had to be taken on the roller coaster freakout. First, we're taken to the heights of heaven with a fumble. Then we're elated again with a what-head touchdown, all for naught. We're given the double bleep punch. Almost said it. The Gronk hold and the Gostowski shank. Try to sneak that in there on me, Matt. Damn you. Looking back, I wish none of it took place and we just lost in a conventional manner. Now, secondly, my other nitpick is your four ways to get in touch with you. Jeepers creepers. You got email, call-ins, Facebook, Twitter. Hey, John, you think that's enough to keep you jumping around during the show? Hey, why stop at four? How about letting us get in touch either by smoke signals? Or how's about using two tin cans with some twine in between? And why stop there? John, do you know Morse code? And if so, well, how about some semaphore then? Hey, that would make eight whole ways to get in touch with you. All in all, it's not enough in my book. You could never have enough Rook. Matt, you always make me laugh, my friend. That's pretty good. What do you think, Kev? Can we do a little Braille, too? a little semaphore?
Calls in Braille.
Yeah, that would be tough. Adam in Fort Worth. Rook, I totally agree with you on the play calling. It was absolutely bland and left me yelling at my TV on several third down inside runs to Danny Effin Woodhead, among others. Overall, though, the O was not sharp. There were key drops by Welker and Lloyd that could have altered the game big time. If Welker makes the catch, then we're not forced to punt, therefore it can't be blocked. Also, the O-line left a lot to be desired and is one of my primary concerns going forward. Brady doesn't move around the pocket quite like he used to, especially under heavy pressure. Not sure if you agree. He's always been like that, to be honest with you, Adam. Now the positive. Defense! I'm not getting too far ahead, but man, I love what I've seen so far this week. I like them to continue the good showing against a whiny Baltimore team that we have mostly figured out. It's only week two. This week it has been a classic fan overreaction. I will be concerned if this is still happening in week seven or eight. As familiar as McDaniels and Brady and some of the others are with the offense, there's still some adjustment period in my opinion. Josh seems to be feeling out some of the personnel, and I'm just looking for improvement week to week, and this week will be a solid indicator. Look for the O to become more dynamic this week and how Baltimore's new wrinkles, no Hernandez aside. This team will respond one way or another. I'm looking forward to it. Okay. Thank you, Adam. He's right there in terms of being positive already. You got to love that, I suppose. Howard, nice to hear from you in Stratford, Connecticut. John, welcome back for another year. Howard, nice to have you back. You're a couple of weeks late, but that's okay. I will start my nitpicks today with the following. One, the Fox affiliate out of Hartford showed the Giants-Bucks game, not Pat's cards. I happen to be one of the fortunate ones in Connecticut that lives in an area that gets the Fox affiliate in New York and Hartford, as well as the CBS affiliate in New York and Hartford. So I get to see three and four different games a week just because those stations tend to choose different games. However, this week, I wasn't so fortunate. Had to listen to 98.5 over the internet. My biggest nitpick lies with the coaching. The play calling was subpar, but the biggest issue I had was not trying to get closer with 45 seconds left on the clock and instead settling for a 42-yard field goal. That was a move that was Schottenheimer-esque, and they played not to lose, and it cost them the game. Good nitpick, Howard. You picked up number two on my list. Good nitpick. They played not to lose. You never, no matter how good a kicker you have, you never put it in the hands of your kicker. You just don't. And that takes nothing away from Gostowski. He's excellent. And he's not even the reason they lost, even though I put him at the top of the list in terms of reasons to lose, because the kick was missed. But I'm just saying, you can't start the blame with him. They played not to lose. Should have taken a shot, should have done something to get closer. They played not to lose, and that did bother me a lot. Number three, he says, Brady needs to pick up his performance. His throws are low this year that directly contributed to the INT on the first play. How many times in the first two games have we seen him throw the ball at the feet of his target? There's a reason for that, Howard. Ball is technically thrown lower by Tom, and he's even said as much when he's feeling the pressure. He doesn't have confidence in his offensive line, but he's not going to tell you that. He's feeling the pressure. The ball gets thrown low because he gets rid of it early. That's why. If he felt more confident in his ability to stay clean and rather upright, then I think you'd see him perhaps make better throws. Just an observation. Number four, special teams allowing the punt to get blocked. Forget holding them to a field goal on that. Had it not been blocked, they probably would have held them to zero the way the D was playing. Good point. Not to be completely down on the team, I'm really impressed with the way the D is playing. With his offense being able to score 25-plus a game, anytime a D can hold the team to 21 or less is a good day's work. That's absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. And the fact of the matter is, they were totally outplayed, and they still had a chance to win the game at the end. Makes you wonder if the last game wasn't the prototypical trap game where a team gets caught looking ahead and doesn't focus on the task at hand. Hopefully the loss has refocused them and they come out in Baltimore Sunday night and walk away with a win. Yeah, I've had a couple of people suggest that to me as well, Howard, that, you know, might have been a trap game. Might have been a trap game because they're looking ahead to Baltimore. I would allow that there's probably more of a chance for that to happen with largely a younger locker room than there would be a few years ago with the older locker room. That's all I'm saying. John, this is Jim in Florida. John, my nitpick this week is twofold. First, how come if the Pats had an unfocused, lackluster, up-and-down week of practice, the coaching staff doesn't see it and take charge and do something to correct it? Refocus the team in time to get them back on track during the week rather than hoping a poor week of practice won't result in a poor effort on Sunday. You know, that's a great question and one that really didn't get answered because, you know, in the locker room after the game on Sunday, almost to a man, everybody said we had a lousy week of practice. Well, if you had a lousy week of practice, why was it lousy? Yeah, it says, how many times do we hear Patriot players say after a loss, we didn't have a good feeling about this game because the team had an unfocused, lackluster week of practice? Well, you got to pin that right on the coaching staff. That's as good a nitpick as any today. Lousy week of practice. Well, whose fault is that? It's everybody's, but you certainly have to pin a lot of that on the coaching staff. And the second part of my nitpick is an unaggressive offensive game plan that seems to be, let's try a run. Okay, that didn't work. Let's go deep. That didn't work either. Let's just run something safe and punt. It wasn't until late in the game the offense showed any semblance of rhythm and urgency. We've seen this before with the same frustrating results. The team wins most consistently when the offense comes out up-tempo, attacks, and plays from ahead. Could not agree more, Jim. Could not agree more. This game begged them to come out in no huddle. Begged them to come out in no huddle and just wing it and keep Arizona's defense on the field without being able to make substitution themselves. The Patriots thought that game they had a better chance to win it by running the ball and then opening things up, and it didn't work. They chose poorly. Webradio at Patriots.com. That's how you reach us here with our nitpicks. Email address, webradio at Patriots.com. Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. 508-298-0398. John.Rook on Facebook, at JRook0722. Twitter, follow. Back after this.
Verizon Fios is America's fastest internet. How fast is that? Faster than Patriots linebacker Gerard Mayo can take down a quarterback, a running back, tight end, or an offensive lineman who just got in the way. In fact, Verizon Fios internet is more than twice as fast as anything you've ever seen. And that means Patriots scores, videos, highlights, and more right when you want them. Fios is built to support multiple devices simultaneously with a constant stream of your favorite Patriots content. And that means you get Gerard Mayo's sacks at Gerard Mayo's speed.
Now that's fast.
Welcome to a world of football where and when you want it. Welcome to Life on Fios, proud sponsor of the New England Patriots. Fios available in select areas. Internet speeds up to 300 down and 65 up megabits per second available.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is teaming up with Bridgestone Tires for an offer that's going to make you and your family very excited. Now through September 30th, when you buy four select Bridgestone Tires at Sullivan Tire, you could receive a $70 American Express gift card or your very own Wii gaming system the whole family will love. See SullivanTire.com. Offer valid August 27th through September 30th, 2012. Mail-in claim form required. Cards issued by American Express Prepaid Card Management Corporation. Wii systems given away on behalf of Bridgestone America. Nintendo is not affiliated with this promotion. Certain limitations apply.
Want to be a Patriot season ticket holder? Join the Patriot season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriot season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit Patriots.com/the list to join today.
Contractors, having trouble getting a construction bond? Did you miss the chance to bid a job because your agent didn't support you? Give me a call. My name is Brent Cross. I want to be your bond agent. Call 800-999-7345. That's 800-999-7345. Online at crossagency.com. Cross Insurance is one of New England's largest providers of construction bonds. Don't miss out on any more work. Cross Insurance, the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank, member FDIC.
This is Rob Gronkowski. I get lots of mail from fans asking me how they can be more like me, Gronk. It's easy. First, just head down to Dunkin' Donuts and pick up a freshly made bakery sandwich. Second, get a sweet nickname. Third, bench press 225 pounds 28 times. That's it. You're just like me, Gronk. Now hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab a bakery sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'.
Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call *NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Back inside Patriots Playbook for a Tuesday on Patriots.com radio. Again, the NFL theme music from NFL Films, and basically honoring the passing of Steve Sable of NFL Films today. Died at age 69 from brain cancer. Sad. His father, Ed, inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame just a year ago, and I'm sure Steve will follow him relatively shortly. But the man changed the way we view the NFL, without a doubt. Changed the way that we look at sports overall. Without a doubt, the way he did. So you might want to catch up on some of the stuff that you see on Steve Sable online or your favorite website of choice. Let's get back to some of the emails and some of the tweets, some of the postings on Facebook that we've had here today. A lot of nitpicks, as you might imagine. Tim sends this one today. Let me see if I can get it up right here. Hold on. Here we go. First off, poor score prediction from you last week. Yeah, because I piggybacked yours, right, Tim? McDaniels has never been good at adjustments. I thought the same when he was here before, and it contributed to the 07 Super Bowl loss. I hate the toss sweep. It almost never works, and not just for the Pats. Defenses are just too fast nowadays. I'd rather see a fast throw bubble screen if the primary reason is to use it as a setup play to spread the D. If you're going to run the ball more, Edelman's bigger to block in there than Welker. I said that earlier, Tim. And to me, that's why Edelman was in there and not Welker, because he's a better blocker when you're trying to run the ball. I don't think it's anything more complicated than that. Tom Brady said as much yesterday on Patriots Monday. The personnel groupings just dictated that's what we were going to do. That's why Edelman was in the game. This whole media manufactured crap that, oh, there's something wrong with Welker and his contract extension, is just that. It's crap. That's all I know. I think it's a fabrication. Anything more than that, I refuse to believe that they would sacrifice the chance to win because there's some sort of petty feeling over not signing a contract extension or missed a practice or had a late bachelor party. Or I mean, come on, that's stupid. Really? As the Miz would say, really? Good WWE reference. Okay, the only reason we were even in the game was because Gostkowski, so it's hard to get onto him. League-wide nitpick, commentary teams need to get off the refs' backs. They go out of their way to beat up on them and talk as if the regular refs are infallible. I never remember them harping on a bad call as much as they are about this season. If we get the regular refs back, expect the same level of criticism. Overall, a game the Pats deserved to lose. And then he says, RIP, Steve Sable. Good points, Tim. Good points, all. Chris says on Facebook, we're fine, obviously. It's the Super Bowl for the Patriots opponent every week, even though we didn't win the Super Bowl. Everyone has forgotten the Giants won the Super Bowl. Packers and the Patriots played the Super Bowl as far as the NFL teams are concerned. Sky was falling last year when we lost to Pittsburgh. We're in way better shape now than we were then. Just got to get the timing down. It would help to have Demps or Tate taking punts back, though. Tate being in Cincinnati. Nitpick is on the mainstream media and the bogus Welker story. He was still targeted more than any other wide receiver or tight end last week and was the decoy until Aaron went down. Okay, Chris, you are correct, sir. Paul says on Facebook, nitpick isn't really appropriate after that result. The offense was poor, possibly due to the loss of Hernandez, while special teams were, to put it mildly, a disappointment with a blocked punt and missed field goal. The only highlight of the missed field goal was that my dad caught the ball and the stadium guy said he could keep it. Really? Really?
Is this one of the UK Pats guys?
It must be, yeah.
Because Paul was telling me that's what happened.
Wow. He got to keep it. That never happens. The security guard's down in the end zone.
I'd throw it back, to be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah. The security guards are always asking for fans to throw the balls back. It's not like baseball because the footballs, quite frankly, are a hell of a lot more expensive than baseballs.
To be honest, if I had caught it, I would have been so pissed I would have spiked it right back at
him. Yeah. Yeah, the missed field goal his dad caught. Stadium guy said he could keep it. Yeah, I would have been all Chicago Cubs on that one. I would have thrown the ball back onto the field. I wouldn't want it to keep it, but I understand why he did, because, you know, being from the UK, I get it.
I just wouldn't want a souvenir from the first home opening loss at Gillette Stadium.
Well, guess what? He's got one now, doesn't he? First home opening loss ever in 11 years. They're now 10-1 in home openers at Gillette. Can you believe this place has been around now for 11 years?
I can believe it.
Well, you see more of the inside of it than I do, because you get to wander around. I only see the inside of the studio. What?
Feels like I've been here 11 years.
I know. We're going to start seeing some upgrades soon, I think.
me being one of them.
Ooh, nice. I hope that means good for you.
I meant me being upgraded.
Oh, you mean
me? Place.
Come on. Couldn't do without you now. On the plus side, the defense played very well. You can only really blame them for 10 of the Cardinals' points. Some people will point to the Cards' offense when discussing their performance, but you can only play what's in front of you. They did a very good job in putting the ball in Brady's hands, putting us in a position to win the game, which is all you can ask. Offense needs to be a lot better next week. No kidding. Absolutely agreed with that one. Lars says on Facebook, Rook, the loss is unacceptable. There are no excuses for losing a home game against a second-tier team like the Cardinals. Now, I'll give them credit for some plays, but overall, the refs were an embarrassment, calling penalties that never occurred, and for the other games as well. Play calling was a disaster, yet Hernandez's injury was problematic and penalized our weekly game plan. McDaniels called illogical plays. But other than that, when you look at the stats, Cobb 140 passing yards, Brady 316. Wells 44 rushing yards, Ridley 60 and a half. Fitz had one reception for barely 10 yards. Walker had 5 for 95. We gave them the game. I expect this team to rebound like they did against the Steelers in 2010. Strong stuff. That's good. And I don't disagree. I don't disagree. You really should not accept a loss at home. There's just, I mean, you shouldn't accept a loss at home. And I think that's kind of the way most fans are feeling right now. It'd be kind of difficult to accept it at home. Especially with the way things transpired, right? The way things went down. Let's see what else we have here.
Did you see my note to you about the guests?
Yes, for tomorrow. Yeah. I'll 2 seconds. I'm going to get into that. I wanted to make sure I updated the email, make sure it's still good here. This one came from... Oh, okay. There we go.
It works.
It works now. Okay, you are never good as you look, never as bad as you look. Pats are going to need to split the consecutive games where they play Houston and San Fran at home. Hopefully they can go, at the very least, 4-2 in the division as well. Seattle will be a tough game on the road. All in all, loss this week would be hurtful. Should be a good game, though. Okay. I think I understand that. Didn't sign it, though. Sign your emails. John in South Carolina. My nitpick is the Patriots fans. Man, we suck. Yeah, John is. Yeah. Nothing like beating around the bush, right, John? We throw Welker under the bus. We turn on the team in a heartbeat. We'll not be bothered to cheer. When the team is fighting for its life, we barely support them. When they're beating someone down, we cheer our little heads off. Well, anyone can cheer and support the team when they're winning. Patriots fans could learn a lot from college fans. Now, that's a good point, actually.
Who's this, strippers? That's his point every week.
Yeah. But John in South Carolina is correct here. Okay, we could learn a lot from college fans. Support the team whether they win or they lose. But you're right.
I agree. Atmosphere-wise, college football is second to none.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of the atmosphere, you know, the whole day event of
without
the
a
stadium.
Doubt. The whole tail, yeah, the whole, you know, the rah-rah.
Of it all.
Yeah, the rah-rah. That's, you know, there's a lot more to me. There's a lot more energy to the college game than the pro
there's
game.
A lot
and
more
that's
fan spirit.
Yes, and that's not taking anything away from the pros. I enjoy the NFL as much as I enjoy any football.
Yeah. No, I enjoy NFL football more, but here's the thing. I think when you're at a college football game and you see all these people that have the connection to the school,
yeah,
whether they went there, their kids go there, you know, something like that.
I love those bumper stickers that say.
You feel more connected to it, I think, which makes the atmosphere a little bit better.
You're right. You do feel more. There's more of a connection.
Like
I love those.
You see the gleam in your eye when you bring up Texas or.
Oh, of course.
You know, for strippers.
It's because
Oklahoma.
It's 4 years of memories. For most people that went to the school, they're the four best years of their life. They wouldn't trade for anything.
And the thing is, you represent that school even
though
you're not there anymore.
Of course.
So I think that's the connection that college football fans feel with their schools.
Can't wait till next year when I have the bumper sticker that says, "My son and my money go to Texas."
I'll be Austin. his name's Austin, so it's.
I think he's destined. Although now. He says he likes Hofstra. I'm like, come on. Really?
I don't think they have football anymore, do they?
No, they don't.
The pride.
He will be. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen. He likes football too much. It's not going
to
happen.
I'm going to have to send him a note and be like, hey, if you choose Hofstra, it's going to kill your old man, so please go to Texas.
No, he can go anywhere he wants. He absolutely can. Wherever he gets the best opportunity. Still trying to decide whether or not he wants to play college baseball. You know, because he sees, when I took him this time a year ago down to the University of Virginia, and we did that whole thing, and he really got to be a cavalier for the weekend, and saw the demand on Division I athletes. It's extraordinary, and he wants to go be a college kid, and I can't really blame him. I was a college kid, you know. Those of us who were lucky enough to do that remember how great it was. So I can't say that I blame him. Anyway, John says everyone wants to get on Welker and Edelman. Well, they were your saving grace in this game. If they're not for them, we might not have had 6 points. For us to lose this game, we needed to turn the ball over twice inside our own 36 and once on the one or two. Had one of our key offensive players go out in the first quarter and have a touchdown pullback because of a hole that would be overlooked 8 times out of 10. Altogether, we gave them 10 points and ripped 6 points from ourselves. So we played bad. We coached poorly. Next week, I think we take Baltimore. No, logically, I don't have a good argument about why we would beat them. It's just a feeling. Pretty good email there, Johnny. Pretty good email. Peter from Toronto says, John, nice to have you back. Why are we panicking? It's only week two. We've gone through this last year where everyone was saying our defense was no good and we still made it to the Super Bowl in Bill I Trust. That's the first in Bill I Trust email we've had. That's good. I was waiting for that. I was thinking that maybe that had gone out of style. We finally got one. It only took us an hour and 47 minutes into the show to get one. In Bill we trust. John says, is Edelman a better blocker than Welker, or is he less likely to get hurt by blocking? Now, that's an interesting point. I've been told by several people that the team believes that Edelman is a better blocker overall than Welker. However, it's also a double reason that Edelman is out there, because they don't want to put Welker in a situation where he's trying to block downfield and he gets hurt. They recognize Wes's value to the offense. And first of all, let's just say, Welker's not, he's not a wuss, okay? Dude is as tough as they come out there, and I think you and I and everybody knows that. But I think what they feel like is that there's a better opportunity for Edelman to make a block as opposed to Welker, who might or might not make the block. And they feel like that's a stronger option. It's not really saying that West can't do it. It's just saying they feel like Edelman might be the better choice. And that's why he was out there. What is so hard to grasp about that scenario? I don't know. Jason, let's shift away from the Welker Hernandez talk. What's going on with Vereen? Ridley seems to have really come out of his shell, and to me as a fan, he's proved that he can carry the load of a lead back. Vereen had more potential coming out of college, but can't stay healthy. How long do we think he's going to continue being a Patriot? That's actually a legitimate question, Jason. He hadn't been able to stay healthy enough. And so you're right. He won't stay a Patriot for too much longer if he can't stay healthy. Here's another one that completely was overlooked, and I got to give credit to Brian Lowe from Patriots Today on this one, because B-Lo tweeted earlier today, overlooked in the loss, and I'm paraphrasing here, but overlooked in the loss was that Rashai Dowling was a healthy scratch. How about that one? And he played a lot, got burnt early at Tennessee, as you recall, and then doesn't play at all this Sunday. Now, I don't know if it's because he screwed up against Tennessee early, although he did get a little better later in the game, or if he's actually hurt again. And that's another guy, like Vereen, that appears to be hurt more than he's healthy. And I don't know how you can possibly contribute. He's been a great enigma for me. So many people say, oh, Rashai Dowling, he's got to play. You know, he's got talent, he's got size, he's got ability. And I'm like, I don't see it. I don't see it. He stands too upright. He's too stiff. He's not mobile. Takes him a while to loosen up. How much is he going to give up before he actually clicks? I don't see it. But, you know, Vereen, Dowling, both got to be healthy before, you know, they can contribute. And you're right. If they don't, you know, get back out there somehow healthy, then you're right. They won't be around very long. So that's the big one. Clay from Foster, Rhode Island says, remember my take on jamming the run down our throats last week? It's not fun to watch and not fun to lose. Release the Brady like in 07. Yeah, release the hounds. You're very true, Clay. Yep. Jamming the run down our throats last week. Yep. We need to release him. He absolutely needs to be released. No question about that. Let's see, what else we have here? I think, all right. Let me go back to here and see if I can get this. And is it going to load for me? Don't you just love computers? Yeah, I know. You have to wait for them to reload. Okay. All right, well, it's not reloading, so let's do this. We got a few minutes left in the program, so if you want to call in, you certainly can. There's a chance for you to do that. We kind of got started there with emails and Facebook posts, and I think we just about got all the pertinent ones in. I'm going to check and see if there's any tweets coming in as well. Don't you love the play-by-play as I'm speaking over dead air here? Because you got to wait for the computer to load when you got four different ways to reach you. No, we haven't gone with the tin can and the string just yet, as Brooklyn Matt suggested we do earlier in the show. Aha. Clip the Ravens from Patriots Extra. He says, I thought this was a trap game. I said it last week on my show, then we were looking forward to the Baltimore game. They were looking forward to the Baltimore game. It's a fair point. I really, however, don't think... I'm not sure I believe in trap game on the professional level. I think that collegians, in all honesty, can be more sucked into a trap game scenario because they just don't have the maturity on the field or in the locker room in practicality as pros do. Pros know that if you get caught looking ahead, you're going to lose. Now, maybe this speaks to the overall youth of the team. If you really believe that this was a trap game for the Patriots last week, then I think that, okay, that's fine, but then it would certainly speak to the overall immaturity of this team. We always talk about the Patriot way and the veteran leadership and yada, yada. Overblown. Overblown. If you go for that sort of thing. I certainly can understand how you could see that. I'm not necessarily sure that I agree with it on the professional level, more so in the college game. But a fair point, nevertheless. Fair enough to make, anyway. So I guess that's part of it, maybe, part of it. The other news of the day today had to do with the fact that the Patriots did sign Kellen Winslow Jr., tight end Kellen Winslow Jr., or at least the sources are reporting the team has yet to officially announce the signing of Winslow. The original report came from ESPN.com's James Walker earlier this afternoon. But apparently, according to his sources, the Patriots have agreed to a one-year contract with the former Pro Bowl tight end. Winslow's agent, by the way, did tweet congratulations to Kellen later, after apparently it happened. I guess this happened all this morning. But again, as I just said, nobody from the team has yet confirmed the deal. But the tweet came from Denise White, who's the CEO of EAG Sports Management. And the tweet read, congrats to our client at Kellen Winslow Jr. for signing with the Patriots. Of course, as we said here, Patriots did bring him in for a visit a couple of weeks ago. He's been on the short list. He did not have the knee problems that some thought plagued him, and some even reported that he flunked a physical, which was incorrect. So be careful what you believe that's out there. He's got a lot of the same skills, athletic, has some speed, good hands, just like Hernandez has. And so the two tight end sets should obviously continue. It's pretty clear that they don't want to scrap things just yet. Winslow's projected to team up with Rob Gronkowski, and he caught 75 passes for 763 yards and a couple of touchdowns last year with Tampa Bay. He's averaged 73 catches and almost 800 yards the past three seasons. So that should be enough to get your attention. And you wonder, well, then why the hell was he available? He was released by Seattle earlier this month. And a team, Seattle actually had gotten him in a trade with Tampa Bay back last May. And I guess the reason that he was released is because there was some concern over his health, among other things. But when the Patriots put him through the paces, I guess they were satisfied enough to think that, well, you know what? He can be of value to us if we need it. And then when Aaron Hernandez turned his ankle on Sunday, well, now you need it if you're still going to sink your teeth into the playbook with two tight end sets. Now, the Patriots are not ready to scrap that plan just yet and keep it going because, you know, I would also argue that, you know, yes, they need, is the original, we get back to the original nitpick that I had of the day, is the lack of versatility in the offensive play calling and the lack of imagination that goes along with that. But at the same time, you realize, well, we're going to get Aaron back, okay? First, what was thought to be a high ankle sprain that can linger with you for a while is now more termed by several reports a low ankle sprain with some high ankle damage, whatever the hell that means. But to me, it means that this team feels like Aaron Hernandez is probably going to come back sooner rather than later. That I would believe based on his personality and his work ethic that we know of. So how best do we keep things rolling the way that we need to keep them rolling in order to do what we ultimately want to accomplish? Well, the best way to do that is to find a way to plug somebody in to Aaron's role, and they've done that with Kellen Winslow. So I understand the move. I understand the move. But I still think this team has to recognize the ability to be able to change on the fly when people go down. There was just not enough versatility in the offense. And then when you couple that with the fact that the offensive line was just not good on Sunday, that just compounds the problem. So two areas of concern. They were two of my nitpicks. I know that you shared a lot of those same nitpicks as well this week. And now it's going to be time to turn the page toward Baltimore. And boy, it's just not, wow. But it's going to be interesting, to say the least. By the way, tomorrow, as Kevin mentioned earlier, our guest in the playbook, Jerry Sandusky, will be with us tomorrow at 2:30 Eastern time. And no, it's not that Jerry Sandusky. I don't know how many of you probably saw the feature on ESPN. I believe it was last week. This is Jerry with a G, Sandusky. He has been a frequent contributor here inside the playbook, especially when the Patriots are lined up against Baltimore. So we've had him on each of the last couple of seasons anyway, in games that certainly mean something. And Jerry with a G, Sandusky, is the radio play-by-play voice of the Baltimore Ravens. And he will be with us inside the playbook tomorrow at 2:30 Eastern time. Very talented play-by-play guy, and obviously with the name that he has, you can imagine how difficult it has been on him and his family in this last, several months since the whole Penn State fiasco began. So it'll be interesting to get some of his perspective and take on that, and you know that he's probably every interview he does, he has to get asked about it, and we're going to do the same thing here without trying to be, you know, insensitive. Because we do want to talk football, and we do want to talk about the Ravens, and the Ravens largely find themselves in the same shape as the Patriots do. They certainly do record-wise, they're 1-1, just like the Patriots, because they lost a game they thought they should have won this past weekend. Albeit on the road, they still lost the game. Wednesday, tomorrow as well, on Thursday, then we will also have Aaron Wilson of the Carroll County Times and Russell Baxter in the playbook. So a beat writer for the Ravens and then Russell Baxter on Thursday's show. Jerry with the G Sandusky and Eric Scalavino, PFW, on Wednesday's show. So we got some good stuff coming up in the playbook this week as we will hit the Ravens and we'll hit them hard. I don't know if we'll hit them as hard as we hope the Patriots do this Sunday night. But nevertheless, that's the game plan, all right? Kev, what's coming up again?
How do you not know what's
going on? I don't know, because I'm completely brain dead, maybe. That's
it's fantasy
why.
Football champs.
Thank you.
It's our
fantasy,
guys, fantasy. Todd and Bill.
Todd and Bill, thank you.
Here to break down your fantasy teams.
Todd and Bill, fantasy football.
Mine needs a lot of breaking down, because I'm hurting.
Are you hurting? All right, I've got some fantasy football questions that have already come in via email, so you can certainly fire off if you like. Todd and Bill are going to take care of all the fantasy football, which is Tuesdays. I just have to get the new schedule right in my mind, that's all. But coming up after our program on Tuesdays, we take care of your fantasy football needs right here on Patriots.com radio. So there you go. In honor of Steve Sable and NFL Films. We'll back same Pat's time, same Pat's channel tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern time. See ya.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program.
Ron Jaworski,
Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf,
CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2. Yeah.